Even if it like totally goes off the rails and we start talking about something else, I'm down with it. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Long Lens Podcast. This is the podcast where I answer questions from my YouTube and filmmaking community, and we just talk about YouTube and filmmaking. In today's podcast, we have a veteran guest of the show, Nathan Swella. Nathan, thanks for being here. So in this episode, I kind of wanted to touch on some of the NAB announcements and just some things that came out this year that are kind of cool. But first off, Nate, I kind of want to know, like, what's been going on with you? It's been a while since you've been on the podcast. Are you still editing for Think Media? Like, what's up?
Yeah, so for those who are unaware of who I am a YouTuber, filmmaker. My channel is Nate's Film Tutorials, but my day job is an editor for the Think Media homepage. So yeah, it's been great. I'm still editing for them. It's been wonderful. We actually have, at the time of this recording, next week we'll have this huge event in Vegas. So I'll be out there and helping people grow their channels. So it's been fabulous. And I actually have just recorded a DaVinci Resolve tutorial for beginners. And that should be coming out soon. Yeah, it's a big...
Is that going to be with you on their page, like on their channel?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is, That's awesome.
I spent about 2 weeks on this video, spent like 4 hours recording it, several hours editing it. But it's really designed for someone who has no idea how to edit in Resolve or just not in general, that they can step in and follow along with me as I edit, try to make it very easy to understand. So I hope a lot of people get value out of that.
How's the YouTube channel been going on your end, like your own personal one?
Yeah, I mean, so this year I kind of been taking it a little bit easy. I wanted to kind of, when I'm inspired to make a good quality video, I will post one on there. So it's been a range of different things. Like I've had some successes with some videos such as a C100 review that's got over 400,000 views. It's one of my most viewed videos.
That's crazy.
I'm kind of doing some follow-up videos on that in the works. And then also like some filmmaking motivational compilations also in the works. So yeah, like nice. I've been taking it a little bit easy. Again, Think Media is kind of my main focus on those things. And as I begin to make videos with them, it becomes a lot more involved. But my channel is still... I'm still going to continue it, and I just kind of want it to, when I feel inspired, just to produce a high-quality video when I have the extra time to do so.
That kind of just is a question for me, but I mean, are you still shooting on the A7S III? Is that still your workhorse?
I'm currently shooting on the A7S III. Yes, still right am. On. Honestly, so I picked this up right around its launch in October of 2020, and it's just so hard to shake. It's such a reliable camera that... I think what the key is, it's like versatile. So I can use it for commercial. I can use it for a YouTube video. I can use it for a narrative film. I've done all three of those things with the same camera. And depending on how you use it, it's totally capable. And I think there hasn't been a new camera that yet has really kind of wanted me to upgrade. You know, there have to be some very specific specs in order for me to upgrade to feel like it's actually an upgrade. So I'm very content with the A7S III. It's been reliable. It's been a workhorse. Sony has several versions of the same camera, but I still like the A7S III.
I don't know. I've been talking about this with like some other friends of mine where it's just, I kind of am starting to feel the pull more towards Sony. Mm-hmm. It's not that I have anything, like I have no beef with Panasonic. I love the camera that I'm shooting
now. I'm a Panasonic fan myself. Like I've shot with like, GH5, S1Hs. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like you can love more than one camera brand. Yeah. I don't know. Like I'm completely agnostic when it comes to camera brands. I'm not like loyal to anyone, but you know, especially being here in Portland, Oregon, like so many of like the big film crews and like all like the cinematographers here, it seems like they're all on Sony. Yeah. So there's even more of like a push for it's just like I can shoot with you guys, but are you cool with me shooting on my S5 2X? You know, like there's definitely more of like I've been feeling more of like a push to go towards Sony, especially the FX30. I know Zach Mayfield just released a video on that. Mm-hmm. It's like that one seems really compelling for $1,500.
Yeah. I think Sony is supposed to be coming out with a content creator camera, ZV-E10 Mark II, which I actually have the first version and I use it for YouTube stuff. It's actually quite reliable, but I think for them to come out with an improved version this year that has 10-bit, it would be like, mm-hmm. for $800 around that would be like, that's a steal. That's like the new version of the Panasonic G7 in my book is that camera. And for creators or filmmakers, it's just reliable. But I agree with you. Sony is just a great blank slate that you can really do anything on top of. I myself might prefer like the Panasonic image, but I feel like at this point you can make any camera look good. If you have the right skill set, it's like you can make any camera look good. So if you just have one, that's the best tool for you. Now, there's certain gripes I have about Sony, and there's certain gripes I have about other brands that I like or prefer from them. And maybe we do touch on that a little bit later in this video. But tell me about, did you actually go to NAB this year?
No, I didn't. And it's funny because like I keep telling myself that I need to go next year. But then I just like, I don't know, I forget about it. And it's never like, I don't know about you, but like, I never necessarily get FOMO about not being there, but part of me just like, I'm literally just going there so I can meet up with other creators. That's like I have no interest in actually like making those videos that everybody makes, you know, like the man on the street with like the, you know, I have no interest in doing that, but just going there strictly to like say hi to other YouTubers. That's like the only reason that I would go. I don't know. Like, what about you?
No, that would be the highlight for sure. It's the people who you meet along the way. And, you know, YouTube and filmmaking can be a lonely journey sometimes. And so to be able to connect face-to-face with the creators is, like, huge. And, like, you know, we've known each other for several years, but, like, we haven't actually met in person yet, you know? So to be able to do that, it's, like, it's just a cool connection. And I think that's why those events like NAB is important. But I haven't been either, and I really want to, hopefully next year. I'm kind of the same way with you. It's like, I should probably go.
Yeah, it's funny because like Godox actually reached out to me like and invited me. This is like, hey, like we'll pay for your flight and we'll put you up in a hotel and everything. But I was just like, it was like 5 days or something like that before. And it's like, that's just a little bit too short a notice for me.
Yeah,
I can't just drop everything I'm doing and go to NAB. But yeah, maybe next year you and me can actually make a point to go there and we can see each other.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, speaking of NAB, now that it's over,
yeah,
I feel like we should kind of talk about some of the things that were released and just kind of our favorite picks. I don't know about you. We kind of talked a little bit about this before I started recording, but it didn't really seem like there was a lot of like, except for one company, which we'll get to at the end, there wasn't like a bunch of just like jaw-dropping releases, in my opinion, anyways. Yeah. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, even the past couple of years, like, yeah, there hasn't been anything, you know, striking out. Like I was surprised Sony only released a lens, you know. I'm like, well, where's the fun in that? But you know, I did see a couple cool things that I wanted to bring up. I think the first one I'll just label off, I really like what Small Rig did with their collabs on specific products. So there's a handful of them, but the two most notable in my book is the Potato Jet tripod. It's a hydraulic carbon fiber tripod. Basically, we've all been there when we need to move quickly and instead of have to unlock each leg, raise up your tripod, he kind of formulated with Small Rig like a little handle that you can then raise up your tripod, set it, and let go, and it's locked. It's actually very impressive. And I remember when I was doing more commercials and on the go, and sometimes you don't have time to set up stuff. That would have been like a really interesting tripod I would have considered. Now I'm kind of shifting more towards being a content creator. Maybe I don't need that immense flexibility, but I thought that was still very cool. And it seems relatively affordable for what they put into in the build quality of, and all that. And then there's the Caleb Pike V-mount battery, which I thought that's sweet. Caleb Pike is my fan, my YouTube idol. To see kind of like he finally kind of made this battery that he knows is going to be amazing. They could literally power several different things off the same go.
Yeah.
It's huge. It is a little bit pricey, $439, but it is a 212 watt battery. You get USB-C, USB-A's, two D taps, like rugged build and like huge amount of info as far as like the wattage and outputs live when you're using the battery. So that looks really cool. And then for both of those are on sale. Or you get a little V-mount plate for your cameras. I'm actually a huge fan of this plate. You basically can slide your camera in, just a simple V-mount plate on the back. You can unlock it, move it out of the way, pop it back up. And I kind of use this. Yeah, this is
sick. Actually,
yeah. Have you used this, one of these?
Yeah, yeah. I actually have one too.
Yeah, they're super sweet.
Here we go.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, honestly, it's like it's just a more streamlined way. And instead of having 15 millimeter rail blocks underneath and bulking it out, it's kind of like this perfect in between where it's like, I want a V-mount battery, but I don't want to rig it out. And this is a perfect thing with that. And I'm literally using V-mount batteries right now to power my camera. So it's like, it's just nice to not have to worry about that.
Yeah, I'm like a really big fan of the small rig batteries that I have. I have like a VB50 and a VB99.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And like that was the one thing that like I liked about that Caleb Pike one was the two D-taps. Yeah, I have that one too. Yeah. But like having two D-taps where I could power my monitor and my camera from D-tap instead of having to like run like a little, you know, like USB or something like that, that's like a really cool feature. But yeah, I had that on my list too, was the small rig collabs. And I think that that's a good... It's a good move by Small Rig to start like collaborating with some of the creators that, you know, use their products. I remember it wasn't that long ago where like, I don't know, people didn't really like Small Rig that much. Like they were like the cheap, not so good brand and everyone was just talking about Shape or Aitzen or Tilta or something like that. But now it kind of seems like they're actually a brand that people can trust a little bit more. And I think that especially if you have, you know, Caleb Pike's name on it and Potato Jep's name on it, like, okay, these aren't like crappy products if they're going to put their name on it. You know, you can actually trust it a little bit more, which I like.
Yeah, I would love to see them continue to do this. And I think for these products, like, they're going to be useful for sure. Maybe they are a little bit more pricey for most people, but like, I can imagine just like coming out with some smaller things that maybe are a little bit more niche for people, like for a creator. Mm-hmm. This content creator movement is big and it's a growing industry. So having more things that are tailored for creators, I think would be super sweet.
The only thing that I wish Small Rig would have kept making is those little tiny handles, you know, for smaller cameras, like GD5, like those 2770 handles. They made them for like half a year and then they stopped. And I was like, man, those are perfect.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Small Rig, if you're seeing this, please keep making those. I want more of them.
Put his name on it.
Yeah, I'll collab with you if you make like small little handles for my small cameras.
There we go.
Yeah, I guess I'll go to the next thing that I saw that were kind of cool. Mm. And this is kind of a shameless plug, and maybe it's not necessarily an NAB specific release, but DJI did release the new Focus Pro and the RS4, right?
Yeah, yeah, RS4, like I only, and I think the Pros came out as well.
So I reviewed the Focus Pro system on my main channel, and it's actually really cool. I was a little hesitant to review it at first. It's like, well, like, is this actually going to work? But then after I started using it, I was like, wow, this is actually kind of sick. Like, especially with the vintage lenses, because that was the one thing that, like, you could argue that, like, on, like, a professional set, you have cinema lenses, maybe you'll have a first AC pulling focus for you. But, like, if you're just, like, a one-man band trying to shoot with, like vintage cheap lenses, you can throw them onto the Focus Pro and then have essentially great autofocus. In fact, I guess this will be two podcast episodes ago, but I recorded the entire podcast with like a Vivitar 28mm, which you actually reviewed on your channel.
Way back then.
Like I watched that video and was just like, huh, well, okay, Nate seems to like it. I'll buy this one. And that's like, that was kind of like I used your video as like justification to like buy that. But I filmed the entire podcast with a Vivitar 28mm like vintage lens with autofocus, and it worked perfectly.
And I only did my review on it with a GH4 way back when, so you're getting like the full image with that. So
yeah, I bet it looks beautiful. And it's weird. It's weird because it actually vignettes, which I didn't know it would, but like it vignettes on the end, so it's like, like I know it was designed for 35mm film, but maybe it just, you know, it's just like a natural occurrence for
it. I'm actually a fan of like vignettes. Like even when I'm color grading, I always put one on. So like that is like the spec that I'm least concerned about with lenses.
Yeah.
Does a vignette? I don't care. Give me more.
Yeah. It's funny. I like, this is completely off topic kind of, but have you been watching or have you heard of that show called Shogun on Hulu?
I have not.
Well, like that whole show, like whatever lens they're using, like it just vignettes all the time. And I was like watching it with my wife, Sarah, and she's just like, why is it always like that? Like, why is it like the dark corners? Like, well, let me explain it to you.
Don't make me explain now.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But yeah, the DJI Focus Pro was released around NAB. I'm sure that like the DJI booth was probably, you know, they were probably showcasing that. And then, the RS4 Pro, which I think... can be used with the Focus Pro system as well. But yeah, I was actually pretty stoked about the Focus Pro because you didn't have to use it with a gimbal.
Yeah.
So I know that technology exists, you know, in the past, but now I can just go handheld, which is kind of cool.
I think DJI is definitely a company to pay attention to, and I'm excited to see what they continue to do. I was really intrigued by the Ronin 4D, and at one point I was like, really consider buying one, because on paper, the Ronin 4D looks like the perfect camera in my book. It really, it's like, as someone who, take a picture, like if you're doing a commercial, like high-end commercial or, you know, narrative films, if you want to be able to pull off these crazy shots that would require a jib, it would require a dolly grip and all this stuff, that camera, I feel like, almost negates a lot of that, and you're able to move super quick. It is expensive, but I think I love how well integrated everything is. The focus motor on that is, because the DJI focus I want to get into is the Focus Pro that you reviewed is kind of borrowed from the Ronin 4D, and it has that built in. I think that's almost a better implementation. I did watch your review, but it seemed like there's still quite a bit you had to rig up in order to kind of get it to working and get it to work. I would just love to see other camera companies come out with more things that would make it super easy for wireless focus pulling, wireless video transmission. And honestly, it would be amazing to start seeing these features inside cameras. Like imagine if I take my A7S III and I want someone to remote focus, like I don't actually have to hook anything up to the camera. It just sends the signal, sends the data, and someone can be controlling it from an iPad. That would be, I think, my ideal thing. Or I feel like it's going to happen sooner than later. It's just a matter of time when companies do that. But that's kind of something I highly appreciate in different camera brands, is that integration and how seamless things work. Because nothing's worse for me than just like rigging on a bunch of crap and then things get missing or things break or there's a faulty SDI connection. It's like, no. If everything's just like integrated, I'm willing to actually pay a little bit more for that. And I think other people will too.
What's the next thing you had? Did you have anything else listed out there?
So kind of similarly to, I noticed a trend, you know, Potato Jets tripod, you know, the quick setup and release. Yeah. There's actually a couple monopods, one from iFootage, which I love their products. They're great build quality. They have a new Cobra Strike, which is on a Kickstarter. And so it's based off of their Cobra monopod, which I actually have, but it allows you to just squeeze the column and you can raise it and lower it. So like one-handedly. So you can literally just have your camera mounted and, oh, I need a plop here. Just drop it, set it, lock it. And then there's another camera company. I believe it was from YC Onion. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But it's very similar. It's more of a trigger design, but same approach. So I thought it was interesting that both of those came out. But I thought, I appreciate the fast pace and just the easiness of that, because sometimes you literally just don't have time to not even have to worry about a tripod or a monopod. But with these things, the support allowing you to be quicker on your feet, I think that is a great person. Like if you're a videographer, maybe shooting weddings, you need to move quick. I think those could be some things you want to look out. I would actually check out the iFootage one, because I just know their build quality is amazing. And on Kickstarter, I think the retail price is going to be $300, $350, but on Kickstarter, the price is $180. So if you're, if you're considering it, it's a good deal to pick one up. And I can at least attest to the build quality has always been very reliable from that brand.
Yeah, and that's kind of crazy, because I remember back in the day when Manfrotto released that one tripod that everybody was using for weddings and events. And that was like, even back then, it was like close to like $300. So getting an iFootage, you know, quick release, basically monopod is kind of sick.
Yeah.
I kind of like I see that stuff and I, you know, it's cool, but like there is part of me just like, okay, I don't shoot weddings. I don't shoot events.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be shooting, you know, like run and gun, I'm just going to be going no tripod. I'm just going to be going handheld.
Yeah.
So it's not like those things aren't like pressing needs for someone like me, but I could definitely see that if I was shooting any kind of events, whether it be weddings or anything like that, it could definitely be super helpful for sure.
I agree. What was your pick for NAB? Any thing that stood out to you?
I mean, this is something that like might be super boring to anyone who doesn't like
we're film lighting nerds. Stuff. Go ahead, say it.
Yeah. Well, it's the Snapbag Air Glow. It's like the inflatable book light. Did you see that?
I have not. No, tell me.
Okay. So it's basically, so this is something that like isn't necessarily relevant to me because I don't shoot any like, you know, like 2x1 panels or any 1x1 panels, but it's basically like an inflatable book light solution. Hmm. If you shoot with, I think the Airy Sky panels are 2x1, but basically if you shoot with any like, you know, panel light, it's basically just like this inflatable book light, and you can switch the backing from like a reflective backing or like an ultra bounce, and it'll just shoot the light up. So instead of like shooting the panel at you, you point it at the sky, you inflate it, put it on top of it, and then it kind of like blasts the light into like this corner thing, and then that corner, like that angled ultra bounce basically blasts the light through another piece of diffusion. So it's just basically an inflatable book light, which is, you know, I think kind of cool. I think it's like I've tried doing that with like, you know, Dollar Tree accessories and stuff like that, you know, like making book lights. But I think that's cool that like that kind of stuff is being made for, you know, people that just want a really quick and easy solution for soft light. And I always like the book lighting technique. Mm. I think that it always looks the best. I'm using a Fotech soft lighter, which is kind of a book light, you know, shining it into a reflective source, bouncing back.
Yeah, I could see that being very interesting for, you know, interviews, your corporate. Mm-hmm. You don't want something that's, you don't maybe not necessarily want to have to bring 3 C stands, but if you could just bring this thing with you and set up and tear downs fairly quick, that could be, it's niche, but I think it could be a cool,
thing for it someone. Definitely very niche and not a super fun thing to talk about. Like nobody cares about soft boxes, you know what I mean? Yeah. But I think it's kind of interesting. That's another thing is like, you know, like as far as like groundbreaking pieces of gear, we just didn't see that much at NAB, at least from my perspective. It wasn't like, you know, there was maybe just a couple, but yeah, the Snapbag Air Glow, inflatable book light. What about you? Anything else?
Let me pull up a quick
before
list
we get
here.
On.
Yeah,
before we get to like the main topic, because I have one more that isn't super groundbreaking, but it's the Laowa Ranger Cine Zooms. I might be reviewing one of those at some point, but Laowa has like their Ranger full frame zooms, but they just released their S35 Cine Zooms, and they actually are going to be releasing an L mount variant. So I could use it on my S5 2X, just putting it in APS-C mode. But yeah, they're basically, there's like a 11 to 18, a 27 to 50, and then like a 50 to 130 or something like that. And they're all constant T2.9. For cinema zooms, they're relatively affordable. I mean, I don't know what cinema zooms really go for, but they're like around $2,000 each or something like that. So not like, not just something that you're going to grab just as like a play around lens or whatever.
Yeah.
They're pretty expensive, but yeah, apparently these are like their newest line because they've had the full frame line and now they're making a Super 35 line. But like my only hesitation with some of the stuff that I've seen is that like, I think it's because they're zoom lenses, the focus breathing isn't as, it's controlled, but it's not as controlled as like a prime cinema lens. So you will still see some zoom in and zoom out from like the focus breathe. But that was the only other thing besides the main two things that I'm sure we're both going to be talking about.
Yeah. Shall we just hit that? I think what's on everyone's mind is Blackmagic did pull some punches this time around.
Yeah.
Big thing like people have been asking for from Blackmagic is the box shape style camera. I wasn't particularly one to, you know, look for specifically that, but I think they took a very interesting approach to, it's almost like their competitor to an FX6. I think it's very similarly shaped with the viewfinder that is sold separately. It kind of has that same sort of feel. I am intrigued by the camera just because like I think it's a little bit more broadcast or run and gun friendly than some of their 6Ks, the pros and cheaper cameras. But what's exciting is this is like a new line of cameras and this is their first, you know, generation of it. So it's cool to see like what could be added on in the future. But to give a rundown of this camera, 6K full frame sensor from their 6K full frame cinema camera. In a box shape style camera, we have a large screen on the side of the camera. It does not flip out or articulate. It's just fixed to the body. And then you have just an L mount, EF or PL, which is interesting because It almost looked like you could swap those, but I don't think Blackmagic allows you to. So there could be maybe more clarity on that. But I think definitely the one to pick up would be the L mount, and then you could pick up adapters to whatever you want to be. So maybe like there's a Mofage Poco adapter that I have. It's a variable ND PL mount. So I could pick that up. I actually could just swap it out for the L mount on my Mofage, mount it to that camera, and then put, you know, my Cinema PL lenses on there and have the ND filter. So there was, I think for me, the biggest kind of concern was, there's no built-in ND filter. And if I want to, you know, change mic settings, I'd kind of have to like tilt the camera over, change settings, and then go back. But maybe with like a monitor on the camera, that would maybe not be as much of an issue. But it's cool to see them use larger batteries, have SDI, XLR inputs, and just like more of a rugged housing, I think could be quite interesting overall. But I mean, I rambled on a little bit too much, but what is your thoughts on this Pixis camera?
It's kind of like with most like bigger end cameras. It's not something that's like super relevant to me because I don't see myself ever using that for like my own content creation. Mm-hmm. But I do see that like, you know, if I was like an ENG or, you know, documentary corporate video type of shooter, I could see it being pretty useful. It was kind of a weird move to not make any articulating screen and just have it like stuck to the side there. Solo shooting without a monitor, you have to get that eyepiece. Wasn't one of the quirks that it could only shoot in Blackmagic RAW, kind of like the full frame 6K?
Yeah.
To where like it doesn't shoot in any other codec, which
I think it does shoot that, like, H.264, but yeah, there's no ProRes. That was removed as the ProRes, yeah.
Okay. And is that H.264, is that like 10-bit? Like, is it like a smaller file size
know.
You can shoot?
Because
I know that like...
Yeah, that would be a good thing to know.
Like, that was the one thing about like the full frame 6K that like, I was almost considering, like, okay, like that could be my A cam, and then I could move my S5 2X as my B cam.
Yeah.
And if I was, you know, if I was starting to do more like higher end stuff, I could start shooting with like the full frame 6K, but it's just weird to not have the option to shoot in ProRes and only shooting in Blackmagic. And me being a Premiere user, Blackmagic RAW doesn't play super nicely with Premiere. So I have to like fully dive into just using Resolve when I was shooting with that camera. So it's just those things alone that just make it less appealing to me. I like when I have the option of, shooting in ProRes if I want to. Those are the main things that kind of stuck out to me that would like kind of turn me away from that camera, I guess. I do think that it's cool that they like are listening to their users, and they're like, okay, you guys want a box camera? Here's what we came up with. Mm-hmm. I still do think that it's probably not what everybody hoped for, and I know that a lot of the people that I've talked to, they're just like, yeah, it's not quite what we wanted, which I just think is funny because like I don't think that like anyone's going to be truly happy with any camera that comes out, but
I think I agree with that sentiment, because like what maybe they were anticipating was something smaller form factor, maybe Zcam F6 style, and just allow you to do whatever you want with it.
Like a red Komodo almost.
Yeah. I don't think a box camera necessarily would be something I like would want. I actually think that their Ursa line is actually a great form factor. I've shot with the Broadcast G2, which is it's essentially a 6K Pro in an Ursa body, but you have a V mount, you got SDI. You did have a flip out articulating screen. It wasn't the greatest, but it was great just for checking my menus and flipping it out to see it. Again, I would always use a monitor, but I could get by with just that small one on there. And I think that sort of form factor makes a lot of sense, because you can flip away the screen to the side and have that protected. Things are not going to scratch into it. Head ND filters. So the box shape is, something a little bit different than I would be kind of used to. Although I'm still intrigued and kind of hopefully might be able to mess around with one. This is kind of segueing into a different conversation, but I think Blackmagic, yes, they are listening, which is great, but I think maybe they misread a little bit on what people are wanting, or considered too many opinions and maybe didn't quite hit the mark. But I think their biggest opportunity as like I said before, is the content creator gap. So that Pocket 4K when that came out was revolutionary. You know, it changed things. Yeah. I think they need a camera for this bigger audience that is content creation. So a camera that is relatively small, that is easy to use. Oh, their menus are already great, so you don't have to mess with that. But having an articulating screen or a flip-up screen and then autofocus. If they can do that, create a content beginner, like a whole new line of cameras, I think they could really steal a lot of thunder from Sony and sadly Panasonic too. I think they could really knock it out of the park because they're so well integrated with Resolve. They're so well designed for the beginner, but having things like not having autofocus is such a huge hindrance for people getting started. And, you know, I'm shooting with a camera with autofocus because I'm going to be leaning back and forward.
Yeah.
So if you had a camera that almost replaced this thing, I think it'd be a massive win for them. Granted, I think their mission is always to make affordable cameras and to make it just have great image quality. So I think they're there. I think they just need to make a few tweaks, kind of just to have just another movement like they did with the Pocket 4K and what they did with Resolve. All these changes, I think they just need a few more tweaks. But I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Is that something you'd be interested in picking up? Is they made a more content creator friendly camera?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, like, I mean, just try to imagine the size of like an FX3 or FX30, but with like the 6K Pro's like APS-C sensor in there, you know, and just like something
that size. It's an FX30 competitor is what they really need also. And I think they even need like a budget version of that too.
Yeah, like it probably won't, you know, I'm just imagining, you know, if they created it tomorrow, like it'll be lighter because it won't be as like ruggedly built as like an FX30 maybe. And it would have vents, so you're not going to like overheat just like the FX30 does. And it would have the same sensor as the 6K Pro. And just, you know, but Mitch, you know, just give us really, I mean, I don't even care about 6K. Just give us really good 4K. Give us maybe some higher frame rates in it just to like make it a little bit competitive to like the FX30. And then just, you know, give us really nice ProRes and put a, you know, put an L mount on it even if you want to like keep it with like your other cameras. Cause I mean, I know that like Sigma, they still make APS-C L mount lenses. You know what I mean? Just like, give us an L mount, but with an APS-C size sensor behind it. And then you can, you know, you can adapt whatever you want to, you know, you can put an EF to L and use the Sigma 18-35 or something, you know, and just have it be like $1,500 or something, you know, somewhere around that price range.
That'd be amazing.
I feel like that would be killer.
The biggest thing too is what you said with the L mount, because Sony's has just a lot of lenses with their E mount and you can use them on APS-C, you can use it on full frame. So I feel like, the L mount alliance needs to be forged more. So if they continue, just embrace the L mount and then more camera companies also embrace, we have these, like, I think Sigma would be the brand I would go to first and be like, I want affordable but good lens. I'll go with Sigma. Yeah. And if they have, some affordable YouTuber friendly cameras. I wanted to kind of bring up because I've been playing around with this guy.
The OG. Have one.
I have one. I snagged this for a deal. I saw it on eBay for
$400. Was it as good as? Oh my gosh, $400 is really good.
Yeah, I'm like, dang! Like I saw it and like no one was like making an offer, and I'm like, I just need to buy this right now,
dude. I was gonna say, was it as good as your GH5 deal that you got?
It's pretty close. The GH5. I don't know how I got that good deal. So I picked up a GH5 with the Panasonic 12-35 for $650. So it's pretty good.
And just for reference, you can sell that lens for like $350 or something like that.
Yeah, and then I was thinking on the safe side, $300, and it'd be under $300.
Yeah, basically a GH5 for $350
with Vlog. Yeah,
with Vlog.
Yeah, all this is coming out for a video. I'm going to be reviewing budget cameras under $500, comparing them all. So I've been actually working on that one. But what I wanted to bring up with this Pocket is, you know, I considered this camera way back when I was thinking either the G7 or this. And I ultimately decided the G7 because I needed something more flexible. And I didn't have the computer to even think about tackling RAW. But now things have changed and computers can easily edit this RAW and it's game changing. But There's like this huge mystique of like people just love this camera and want to, like, they just love the image, how it works. And
yeah, Samuel Elkins is using it now.
Yeah. So I'm like, there's always been this allure behind it. And I'm like, well, I'd use the 4K and I like the 4K, but it's like, you know, so like, why would I want this? But when I picked it up and started using it, let me just turn this on because like, it is stupid simple. This is the menus, right?
Yeah.
There's five menus and it's like so simplistic and easy to use, and it shoots continuous raw 1080p.
Yeah.
But the 1080p, it's like holding up to like the 4K in most cameras. And it's just like that sort of like simplicity in this small form factor. I'm like, if they came out with a version that's maybe slightly chunkier, a battery that actually, you know, works well, and then having like, I just imagine a flip up screen right here. Boom. That'll be perfect vlogging camera that, you could shoot Blackmagic RAW with. So I almost think like maybe they should kind of rethink this little guy. How would you make an improved version of this?
Yeah, that was like, I feel like they created like a cult camera with that one. Yeah. Like there's so many people using it. I mean, one of my like, you know, highest viewed videos is me like rigging out that camera back when I had it. And there's always been part of me just like, man, I should just buy that again just for nostalgia's sake. But it's crazy because like they use that in like Logan, you know, like the Wolverine movie. Like it can mix in with Alexa kind of crazy. I don't know. It's a really cool camera. And I definitely feel like if they remade that camera with just those things, like better battery life, you know, keep the same size sensor, because I think that sensor is what's special about it.
It is definitely like super nice. Extreme. And I mean, obviously it's a huge crop factor, but I love you can pick up super 16 millimeter lenses for dirt cheap. Like, obviously, this is not an old lens. It's a CCTV lens, but it's $30, 25 millimeter, 1.7. And just a cool, funky image. I love it. But I picked up a super 16 millimeter. It's a 12.5 millimeter f1.8. And I'm really excited to test that one out. But, like, that was $50. And it's just, like, you can pick up these old, and they're cinema lenses, so they're going to have that older look. And pair it with this thing, it's like, you're rocking, you're out. It's filming. Yeah.
Something else I was going to ask, I feel like I wasn't as prepared for this camera, but I know that like Blackmagic, they also released another camera. It was the 12K, right? Like a new 12K? Yeah.
So they have a 12K, and they actually have a LF 17K. Did you hear about this?
Yeah. I saw the LF 17K. I'm just like, good grief. Like that's like a... It's like an IMAX type camera, right?
Yeah. I think it's a competitor to make IMAX style more movies.
Like accessible.
Yeah. And I don't know what the price is on that thing, but let's go back to the 12K.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're talking 12, 17K. These are numbers I don't even think are real, but the 12K, So it's more Ursa's, they call it the Ursa Cine 12K. So if you're familiar with the Ursa body, they already have a 12K, but I think they improve the body. I honestly haven't paid too much attention to what they've added. I believe it's full frame, right? 12K. And then you just have a plethora of shooting modes. You can crop into 4K, get like probably that super 16 look. I'll hand it off to you on that.
Well, honestly, like I wish I had like read up a little bit more about it, but the only thing that I do know is that it's pretty pricey. Like it's
$15,000 like, for it. It's not bad. It's actually not bad at all.
No, I mean, for what it is, I think it's great. But as soon as I saw the price, I was like, okay, like, I feel like, I kind of feel like the people that, the people that watch my channel or like listen to this podcast probably aren't interested in a $15,000 camera. It's cool that Blackmagic is innovating in that way. And they're like trying to like, you know, improve on the original 12K that they have. But that's kind of a hard pill to swallow for if you're someone like me. I don't see myself buying a $15,000 camera anytime soon.
It's great. Those have the built-in ND, and those have also interchangeable mounts, which is huge. I think bring that to the Pixis, you know, have us the ability to swap out. Built-in ND filters is always great. I think it is interesting kind of going back to our conversation, like they're approaching the cinema and then I don't know what they're doing with IMAX. That's great that they're doing that. Don't get me wrong. But I'm like, you got a whole market here that's like this budget friendly, this whole thing. that they're missing out on. Not everyone's going to buy an LF 17K.
Yeah. I feel like there's like two different sides of like the Blackmagic spectrum for me. It's like they either have cheap cameras that I think are ergonomically horrible, or they have ergonomically good cameras that are just way too out of my price range. You know, it's like you had the 4K, like the Pocket 4K, right?
I
never wanted to pick that up because I used it a couple of times, and it's just like, it's the most like, it's like the chunkiest, weirdest camera.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like rig it up, it's just everything is just way too wide, and it's just not what I'm used to. And so I'm just like, yeah, I would use an Ursa Mini or, you know, like a 12K or something like that on an actual project, but it's just like, I'm not going to spend the money. You know, I'd much rather just shoot on an S5 2X because, you know, I don't know. Everything with me is like, I know that I'm not a traditional filmmaker, but like at this point, I just want like, give me the smallest camera rig as I possibly can get, but still give me like amazing quality, you know, like that's kind of where I'm at. But something else that I kind of wanted to like touch on, just because you were, you know, like you're talking about the GH5, and like I just did a video on the GH5 not too long ago.
Yeah, you inspired me to pick one up.
Yeah, there is a slight part of me, and this isn't really anything that I plan on talking about, but like, have you ever found that like with these newer cameras, like the S5's 2X or the A7S III, like have you ever found that like the image, like getting good stuff is almost too easy at some point, where it's like you almost want a little bit of that friction again, just to like inspire you to like actually think a little bit more about what you're doing. Like I bought the GH5 originally because I wanted to make a video on it and I needed like a B camera, but then like I realized, okay, I gotta like think about things a little bit more because I know that it doesn't have the same dynamic range as my S5 2X. Right. It doesn't have, you know, autofocus. It still has a lot of other great features, like, you know, like inbuilt, you know, stabilization and all that kind of stuff. But like, I still find myself like wanting to pick up little, you know, G85s and shoot with them just because there's just a little bit of friction and I have to think about what I'm doing with this.
Sharp.
I have to make sure that I'm not blowing out my highlights. I have to make sure that I'm not, you know, out of focus. I have to like think about that it's only an 8-bit camera, you know? Like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that, since you kind of were talking a little bit about older cameras?
Yeah, that's a great thought. I don't think of it quite that way. Maybe it's because I think of cameras two different ways. My A7S III is my workhorse and I don't want any friction. When I'm shooting for a client, I don't care. Like, I just want the camera to get out of the way, right? So obviously there's that camera. Then there's fun cameras. There's the GH5, there's the Blackmagic Pocket. That I think the allure of it is something that is small and just like either gives you a unique image or something that makes content easy to shoot with. And probably the challenge for me is like, yeah, how can I maximize the most out of this 10-year-old camera? How can I, you know, there's that side of me too, where I can maybe relate to what you're saying. Maybe I don't quite think of having to protect it, but I'm like, what can I do to make it the best image possible from these older cameras? I'm not going to bring those to client shoots. I'm not going to bring it to film a YouTube video, but I do kind of like to have cheaper cameras. I think because I bought a ZV-10. It's Sony's cheapest mirrorless camera. And it's actually in my lineup of cameras that you can pick up relatively cheap, like under $500. And that camera, it only shoots 8-bit, but it does shoot S-Log 3. And when I was filming my test comparison, I'm like, I did a blind test. I'm like, wait a minute. I like this camera the most out of this because it's just like super clean. I'm very familiar with S-Log 3. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Because it's 8-bit, you kind of have this preconceived notion that, oh, I can't grade at all. But, you know, I've started using it. And I'm like, well, it's quite good. And then also, as I've shifted from content creator, corporate, to primarily just content creation at this point, I've been shooting, like trying to get the best look in camera. So right now, like this footage is not graded unless Nigel decides to do something with it. But
I'm gonna slap a sepia filter.
Yeah, there you go. So it's literally a baked in profile that tweaks settings just so it could look good when I'm talking to my A-roll camera. So I don't have to worry about tweaking things, even though I do. I love to make things look good in color and post. But there's not a need to shoot S-Log for everything. So it's kind of managing what your expectations are. But going back to your question, I agree. There is something very alluring about old cameras. And I am so like envious of like people who are getting into film now. And like, look what amazing cameras you have. Like you could pick up a GH5 for $500. My first camera was, like, besides using my phone, was the T3i.
Yeah.
And you know how, I mean, that's a great camera, but it's like, you couldn't do much with it at all. And to have these such capable cameras, that's, I think, the interesting thing is finding these old cameras that still hold up great today. That, yeah, if you're just getting started or you just want a fun camera, there's great options now. And I think that gap is only going to continue to grow, because I think, kind of alluring to this point, it's like all cameras are kind of great at this point, and it's finding something that's truly fits your need, that is the luxury. We can make all these cameras work, but I think we just kind of get annoyed with having to plug in cables.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like, I just to reiterate, like, I don't ever want to not have a camera like the S5 2X. Like, I love how simple this camera is to use and get a good image out of. But when it comes to like my own like creative process, I guess it just, it gives me a little bit more of a rush. Like I just, like, I'm filming a little video on this camera for my second channel, and like, I filmed some stuff out in my backyard, and I like, I made sure that like my highlights weren't clipping, and I got my zebras and everything. And then, like, you know, I shot it in Cinelike D, and then I got it back in my editor, and was like, wow, this looks really clean and really good. Like, how does this look so good for, you know, a camera from 2016? And that just for some reason gives me a little bit more of a rush than like, well, it's like, duh, my S5 2X stuff is going to look good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, you don't expect it, I guess, from little cameras.
Almost
like this.
Too. It's like you're taking the time to make it look better. Cause like, I work with a lot of footage. Like, yeah, we're shooting with Sony cameras, but it's like, we could have made that shot look better if we lit it better, if we took the time for it. You know, you may not have that luxury for those things, but you're then thinking about how I can make this better, how I can push it, how I can, you know, get the most out of it. So that is definitely fun. I kind of want to talk a little bit about Resolve, DaVinci Resolve.
Yeah, that was the last thing I had on my list.
DaVinci Resolve. So I suddenly saw that they released 19. I'm like, well, what is this? And there's quite a bit of improvements with this. So I'm just like, this is amazing that we get this stuff for free and an update. Yeah. So just kind of loosely kind of get the gist. A lot of new AI tools. They have AI-based noise reduction, IntelliTrack for faster tracking. They got proof transcriptions. They've come out with this cool film look creator that basically, I think what it does, instead of going to the color page for to color grade, basically you now have those tools in the edit page. So what you're probably familiar with Lumetri in your edit page with Premiere, it's going to be a little bit like that. But I think you can even go as far as like film grain is all, it's just like a simple toggle. So
yeah,
that's super cool for those who are, you know, want a color grade but don't want to know what a note is. you know, they can go in there.
That's me.
Exactly. Really cool stuff. And I think the biggest thing I noticed was, are you familiar with voice isolation?
Yeah, I've used it a couple of times in DaVinci.
So I use that tool all the time because sometimes I'm working with files that like have music in it and I need to remove it. I'll just turn it on and it cuts all that. Works pretty darn well for most things, but it'll cut out like all the background noise. Basically, they introduce a feature where you can have the reverse of that. So maybe someone's talking in the background, but you're trying to record an ambient thing. You can actually cut out someone else's voice. So I'm like, oh, that's I didn't know you could do that. So that's amazing.
Huh.
And then I believe for music, they came out with a tool called the Music Remixer. And I hope I got this right. It was a little hard to understand it, but I believe you can take any music into Resolve and choose to isolate the drums or remove the drums or certain frequencies, turn off the vocals and just have your music, which is huge for those times when you need to get your song perfectly right and maybe you don't have stems. You can just go and disable that. I wish I did further research because I want to make sure it's any track, like maybe it's downloaded stems or whatnot. But that's just going to be huge for editors. And like myself, sometimes you're not dealing with the most ideal footage and you can fix those things. You can go in and tweak your music to where you want it to be. So a lot of cool stuff. And I think overall too, they also just improved the free version to match more with the studio's tools. Mm-hmm. So you can like, basically have the same performance out of the free version with the studio, which is amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. It's definitely nice. And that's kind of what I'm super thankful from Blackmagic is like, yeah, we get all these crazy tools. I still continue for, you know, more improvements and just how I make my job easier. It's been such a reliable tool. I made the switch mid of 2022 from Premiere, and I'm just said goodbye to Adobe crashes. it's been super great.
Meanwhile, they're charging us all. Yeah, they're charging us all $1 more now per month for each.
What?
Yeah, it went from like $20.99 to like $21.99 or something like that. Now I don't know.
Come to the dark side.
It's weird because the last podcast with my buddy Jake Felzine, he's a DaVinci editor too, and he talks to a lot of editors on YouTube, but he was like asking me why I still used Premiere, and I kind of, you know, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole there, but I don't know, like ever since moving to, like I just upgraded to an M1 Max MacBook Pro from like a 2019 i9, and I haven't had any problems with Premiere. And
oh, that's amazing.
It's been super stable and super, super great. So like, you know, like maybe my bar is set super, super low, but like just being able to like, you know, play back all of my S5 2X stuff in like full resolution and like throw a bunch of stuff at it. And it doesn't even, like the only time I've ever heard a fan is if I've tried to like render out like a 30 minute long, highly compressed MP4 video or something like that. Then I'll maybe hear the fans, but it's just, it's insane that like even on Premiere, I can edit for hours and have all of these different like stacked timelines and it doesn't even, like it's just silent. So I'm like, I'm stoked on that. And until Premiere starts acting up again because of a new OS update or something like that, which I'm sure is going to happen because that's what happens all the time. Whenever like there's like a new operating system for Macs, you know, Premiere ends up acting all stupid. But at some point, I think I can see myself switching to DaVinci. But right now, it's just, I'm just way faster in Premiere. I still, like I said in this other podcast, I still color all my stuff in DaVinci and I create all my LUTs in DaVinci. I don't do any cutting in DaVinci. It's just for color.
So do you just export ProRes files or do you kind of use an XML to get into Premiere again?
Like I don't cross. So like I just, so what I'll do is I'll literally just, I'll export a video files and then I'll just create LUTs and use them that way.
Okay.
So like, yeah, I'll just like export like a cube LUT or whatever, and then I'll just use those in my Premiere workflow.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is like, even probably with Premiere, like I don't know how much they've improved it, but like just even switch to Resolve from the same computer is like twice as better performance. Like the rendering speeds are crazy. But that I think shows testament to their M1 Max because I have the Max Studio with that chip and it's been amazing. And it's like finally just don't have issues with the computer.
Well, it's almost like unlocked a new level of filmmaking for me because like I feel like before I just rendered out a 55 minute podcast episode and on my last computer that would take probably 3 to 4 hours, right? Oof. And those are usually like my go and skate like rendering breaks or whatever. But now I hit render, I go downstairs and grab a cup of coffee, I come back up in like 8 minutes it's rendered. You know what I mean? It's like, well, now I have to just keep working. I can't use I can't use rendering as an excuse to be lazy.
Just say it's rendering.
Yeah.
I feel
like
you.
I still tell my wife, it's like, yeah, I'm just, you know, stuff is rendering, so I'm gonna go for a run.
I need the mental break. No.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, it may not have been a super exciting year, but I think if companies could still continue to listen to like the consumers and keep iterating, I think we'll see some definitely cool stuff. And, you know, the year's not over, so we could have much
more. Yeah, we still have Cine Gear.
I think that's where a GH7 might come along.
Oh, really? Do you have insider knowledge that I don't know?
I heard from a friend.
Oh, well, dude, like I talk with Panasonic sometimes, but they don't like, you know, they don't give me any like insider information on any of that kind of stuff. Dude, GH7 would be sick. I'm still trying to get my hands on a G9 Mark II.
Yeah, that looks like an interesting camera.
It's essentially, I think, just an S5 II, but in Micro Four Third world. I mean, I still like Micro Four Thirds. I think it's they're still fun little cameras. Because that's all we have to talk about. I hope that was interesting for you guys. I always love talking with Nate about camera stuff and just nerding out a bit. Yeah, unless you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, I think that's great. I mean, it's always great to be back on your podcast, and hopefully we have more of these coming. We can talk about gear. We can talk about tips like we did a few times before. Those are always great.
I mean, you're a regular on the podcast now, so you'll have to, have to come back again. Anyways, thank you so much for listening to the Long Lens Podcast. I'm going to leave all of the information for Nate Swella in the show notes below. You should definitely go check out his YouTube channel. He does a lot of really good stuff there. So yeah, Nate, thanks again for coming on, and I'll talk to you later.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.